And thanks everybody for being here. What I wanted to do first is position Texas as far as corn producing compared to the other corn producing states. And no surprising, you see where the action is, most of the corn producing states in the Corn Belt, but Texas still produces a very significantly amount of corn. This is the map from 2007. You can see on this table in 2008 that Texas had the 13th place as far as producing the acres produced in corn, and this is more than 2 million acres. And notice also there was a 7% increase in the acreage planted to corn compared to a decrease in the planting acres in the other states. This is sorghum in 2007. The picture is a little bit different. Two major players here. The Kansas and Texas are the big producers. However, in 2008, Texas became the number one producer as far as acres planted with due to an increase of 27% acres planted compared to Kansas, that the increase was only 4%. And this is a map of Texas. This is where the main corn producing areas in Texas are. This is, you can see here that the main producing areas are actually in the plains. Significant amount is being produced also in the central part of Texas, in the coast, Gulf Coast, and also in the Rio Grande Valley. Sorghum in the plains, and also in this part here, the Rio Grande Valley and the coastal bend. Now, where are those stem borders distributed? Let's talk about first the southwestern corn border. The distribution of these is limited to the northern part. I mean, there have been occasional reports of this insect being found in actually as south as the lower Rio Grande Valley, but typically the distribution is limited to the northern parts of the state of Texas. European corn border. My last information is that TDA, the Texas Department of Agriculture, had 20 counties under quarantine for the presence of the European corn border. I think the distribution goes as south as Hale County, right north of Lubbock, Texas. The neotropical border, Diatria lineolata, occasionally being found in the lower Rio Grande Valley, is not uncommon. The years I worked there, for the last two years, I never found this insect there. This is non-economically important, but it's the most common one in Mexico and Central America. And then we have the sugarcane border, very important. It was found in the mid-70s in the lower Rio Grande Valley, and since then it has expanded the distribution to the winter garden, which is this one here, the Gulf Coast of Texas, also where it's creating new problems. And of course we have a fifth player here, which is the Mexican rice border, the Eurema loftinae. And this one was found for the first time in 1979 in the lower Rio Grande Valley. Moway mentioned that the when it arrived here in the rice producing areas, which was 1988, but actually had arrived in rice, and remember that I'm just talking about corn and sorghum, so just to not confuse you. In corn and sorghum, it actually appeared in 1979, and then in rice it moved out in 1988, I think. And from this point, it actually moved and expanded the geographical area towards the Gulf Coast. So it is the Mexican rice border, one of the one that's causing a lot of concern, because number one, it is capable of affecting more than 17 crops. It continues that expanding behavior, okay? And it is not only expanding geographically, but also all those counties that have been already infested, it is increasing in the intensity. Just to give you an example, this morning I run into Noel Troxler, who said that in the Winter Garden area, he no longer sees sugarcane border, or he sees in those counties are actually the Mexican rice border compared to years in the past. This has a behavioral avoidance of natural enemies, mainly because this insect is capable of plugging all those galleries with frass and makes it virtually impossible for natural enemies to infest the larval stage of this insect once the larva is inside the stem. And also, it hasn't been studied for Bt tolerance. I mean, in the lower Rio Grande Valley, the absorption of Bt crops is not that big, so it hasn't been exposed to that until now, that is infesting the Gulf Coast part of the state of Texas. This is a table. I chose to present this table from 2005. This is a study that was conducted by Stephen Biles and other scientists. And what he did in Calhoun County, which is in the Gulf Coast area, he sampled different three commercial non-BT fields. And what he did is he sampled the 5th, 25th, and 50th row for sugarcane borer infestation. Am I out of time already? And thank you. And so what you see is you know, about 50% infestation in the whole plant, which is non-significantly different between rows. But basically, I just wanted to show you that in 2005, the infestations were already heavy of sugarcane borer in corn in Calhoun County. And why I chose 2005, because I reviewed different reports from 98 when the first BT crops were being evaluated over there. And it was not uncommon to find zero infestation of the sugarcane borer in 98, 99, 2000. The most significant jump that I found was in 2005. This is another trial in Calhoun County again. And this was conducted by Roy Parker and other people, other scientists. And he was evaluating commercially available BT technologies, GeoGuard by Monsanto, Herculix by Dow, compared to the non-BT. And he sampled the number of larvae in 10 plants, number of tunnels in 10 plants, and the length of those tunnels. And you can see that both commercially available technologies control those infestations with no difference between each other. And the differences were actually higher, significantly higher, in the non-BT. And basically, my point here is that in 2005, producers started seeing this, and that's when they started actually adopting more and more BT technology in corn in the Gulf Coast area of Texas. This is something that Stephen Bile did in 2007. And what happened here, this is interesting because he evaluated the concentration of humanicin, which, you know, it is an important mycotoxin produced by Fusarium moniliformi. And what he did, he took different ears from infested fields, and he separated those ears by those that were showing sugarcane borer damage and those that were not showing sugarcane borer damage. And then he further separated those by those that had actual chewing on the kernels and those that were not being fed on the kernels. And the fumonisin concentration was significantly higher in the ones that had been fed directly by the sugarcane borer, significantly higher than the ones that had damage but not in the kernels, and significantly higher than the one that was not affected at all. So this is another reason why producers started turning into BT commodity, BT corn technology. And this is a summary of different studies. What you see here is the different studies that were conducted to estimate the major frequency allele for resistance to BT technology, I mean the BT protein in several stock borders. And this one here, highlighted in black color, is a study that was conducted by Dr. Wan. I think he's gonna mention that later. And he actually studied the population sugarcane borer in the Texas Gulf Coast. And he found the major resistance allele frequency was very low, less than 0.0016, which they concluded that BT technology still offers the high rate. This is the same study in Louisiana, and they found a little bit higher, still relatively low, but this tells us that actually the resistance to sugarcane borer had to be monitored to avoid problems in the future. And then several other scientists here worked on the European corn borer. They didn't detect anything. Southwestern corn border, they didn't detect any resistance. And then the Mexican rice border hasn't been studied for this purpose. And of course, I couldn't talk about corn and sorghum production in Texas if I don't talk about ethanol production. This is the situation in the US. 20% of the corn supply in 07 went for ethanol production. There is 180 ethanol refineries in Texas, I mean in the US. But the situation in Texas is that there are three operational refineries, one under construction, and immediate plans for five more. So Texas is actually catching up with the ethanol production. What this means is more incentives for better prices for producers. They're increasing the rate, I mean the acreages for these crops, particularly here, and they do that year round. That means that there's gonna be more host availability for stem borers in this part, particularly because it doesn't suffer those cold winters that we have in other parts of the state. some final comments. These are comments by Texas scientists. In the plains, the infestation of these two stock borers in sorghum has typically not considered being an economic problem. That is in sorghum. In corn, these two species have been successfully controlled by Bt technology. And also in this area, they have been very successful in implementing the stubble destruction. As you know, southwestern corn border girdles the base of the plant, and they prepare this overwintering chamber. If they destroy the stubble, then with the cold winter sometimes they experience in the northern part of the state, there is a lot of overwinter mortality, and then they reduce the supply of the stem borers for the following spring. That's not the case in South Texas. Why? Because here, first, they don't really have cold winters, and secondly, because it is right at that time when the rainy season begins, and it's almost, for some producers, almost impossible to go back to the field and destroy the stubble. So what are the final comments for Texas Gulf Coast, the Winter Garden, and the Rio Grande Valley? Historically, producers or scientists have not considered this an important pest. Okay, it was. The combination of this was an important pest only in late planted corn and sorghum. But recently, the sugarcane borer has become a problem, particularly in the upper Gulf Coast. And remember, I'm talking about corn and sorghum here. Okay, and not only in late planted, but also in crops that have been planted within the normal planting dates. And this is an observation by Roy Parker in 2008. The Mexican rice borer became more problematic, more so than the sugarcane border in the lower Gulf Coast, which is this area here south of Corpus Christi around the Kingsville area. Okay, and this is the first time he actually sees that becoming more problematic. And there are changes that are worth mentioning in the sugarcane industry, particularly here in the lower Rio Grande Valley. A lot of these producers are adopting what we call the green harvesting. And for those of you who are familiar with that, that leaves a lot of green tissue, green material on the fields, and that's an excellent breeding site for Mexican rice borers. And in general, the summary for the whole state of Texas, there is an increase in corn and sorghum for ethanol production. What are the implications? As I mentioned earlier, a lot of producers start to plant that year round. These sorghum varieties are very tall. There's a lot of breakage. And not only that, but by planting that year round, that offers the opportunity for stem borers to multiply over and over, and that increases might increase the infestations during the following spring. No Bt resistant, no resistance to the Bt protein has been detected yet, but there is the need to continue monitoring that for the sugarcane borer, and the advice is also to start that immediately with the Mexican rice borer. Also, we need to reevaluate the economic threshold levels given the new value of these crops, the ethanol production, the biofuel, biomass. That is something that has been shifting those economic threshold levels downwards. And there's additional research needed. Resistance development, as I mentioned earlier, area-wide stock border ecology. I know that there is some work like that being conducted here on the ecological aspects of this. To my knowledge, nothing has been done here yet, and it is an important aspect because there are two big species being colliding at this time, the sugarcane border and the Mexican rice border. Just to give you an example, I worked 2 years here, and during those 2 years in sugarcane, for every 20 borers that I found in sugarcane, only one was sugarcane borer, 19 were Mexican rice borer. There are two theories for this. The first theory is that the Cotisia flavipes that have been released over the years wiped out or had been controlling more the sugarcane borer than the Mexican rice borer. And the second theory is that in fact Mexican rice borer is displacing the sugarcane borer. And also there needs to be the evaluation of the economic damage of these two of this complex of border species in the new ethanol producing crops. These are my acknowledgments. I did most of these when I was working for the Texas AgriLife Extension Service. The co-authors Roy Parker, Stephen Biles, and Pat Porter provided a lot of this information. So if you have a problem with that, just give them a phone call. And Greg Crowham, Ed Riley, and Noel Troxler also helped me a lot. Now AgroScience has paid my trip here, and I don't know if I have any time for questions.
No, you have three minutes for questions. Good.
Yes.
Sugarcane borer in corn infected. Is there evidence to indicate that it is affecting yield?
Okay, the question is if there is any evidence that sugarcane borer in Texas affecting corn is also affecting yields. Okay, there hasn't been a clear evidence yet, and that's what keeps a lot of scientists thinking that it hasn't been a problem. Okay, except in that case that we saw the table I showed, that was it affected yield significantly. Okay, but because it is something new, this increase has been very new in Texas. Still, a lot of people doesn't believe that it will affect yields unless there is a severe increase in the infestations. Yes. Do you have any other question? Oh, yeah, there's someone.
Of course, I know you're in California now. Do you know if sugarcane borer or Mexican rice borer, are they California?
Not the Mexican rice borer. And at least in the area where I am, there were no borers at all. But the Mexican rice borer is still limited to that part of Texas and about to enter in Louisiana. Yeah, that's what I know about it. Mm-hmm. All right, thanks.
We have time for one more question.
No. Oh, there's one more over there.
Mexican rice borer, how many generations per year in Texas, and does it hit each record of the years?
The question is, how many generations in Texas?
Yes.
And they reproduce year-round in South Texas, in the lower Rio Grande Valley. I used to have a colony of Mexican rice borer, and I kept collecting from sugarcane fields in January, December, January, February. As long as you have sugarcane, there is going to be Mexican rice borers in South Texas. How many generations? Some people were talking about five generations, but I think, and honestly think, it's more than that. Yeah, but they reproduce year-round in Texas, in the lower Rio Grande Valley.
Thank you.
Thank you.